How many times have our patients returned to our office and are just stuck in the cycle of chronic inflammation? We throw everything we have at them, nothing changes, and even our dentists are frustrated. Rather than throwing our hands up and shrugging, we need to be turning to PerioTrace by PerioProtect. I have seen the evidence firsthand and have helped so many hygienists find this resource because it really works, which is why there are so many products on the market now trying to imitate them. The results are speaking for themselves, but rather than going with an unproven product, stick with the only periodontal medicine delivery system cleared by the FDA. And not only that, but their support team is seriously among the best I've ever encountered, from the education to implementation to support when there's the inevitable bumps on the road. They are there for you. If you want to get in contact with them to learn more about how you can treat your patients better, head over to perioprotect.com/RDH. And on that site, at the bottom is a contact form that you can fill out or simply email them directly to ask for help. This is one thing I truly believe should be in every dental practice. perioprotect.com/RDH to stop the cycle of chronic inflammation.
Now, some of the states have chosen to break away from the federal structure and be state OSHA states. And what my bottom line message is, it doesn't matter what state you live in, everybody has to comply with what we're going to talk about today. My experience is both the state boards and OSHA only come into an office when there's been a complaint. So the whole trick is to avoid complaints, obviously. Do the right thing, avoid complaints, and neither of these agencies, OSHA or the state board, will be a part of your life with these issues. Pretty much what's impressive to me is when I teach about bloodborne pathogens, those same principles apply to protect us against any infectious disease.
Get ready for your unofficial dental hygiene podcast. These are the tales of two hygienists, one East Coast RDH and one West Coast Guygenist. Listen as they tackle the profession of dental hygiene with humor and enthusiasm. Now, please join Michelle Strange and Andrew Johnston as they tell you a tale of two hygienists.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of A Tale of Two Hygienists. Episode number 193. My name is Andrew.
And this is Michelle. I have a real funny story for you guys, because if you've listened to this podcast for any amount of time, you know I love my wine. Just do. Like I do. I mean, we used to have a story time with Michelle, which we will probably bring back eventually, where I drank wine.
Once she gets like multiple wine sponsors for that particular part of it, we'll bring it back.
Yeah. So somebody go out there and get me that wine sponsor. So I checked into an Airbnb. So since I'm traveling, I'm in Seattle, everything's so expensive everywhere I go. And I'm always going back and forth between Marriott and Airbnb. But this time I decided to try out this private room thing because it looked like it was really like a section of the house that you could have. And I didn't read the house rules because, you know, everybody's got here's how you check in and all that stuff, whatever. So I open up the little booklet and like the fourth rule is like no alcohol on premises. And I was like,
eesh. Have you met the owners of the house?
Yeah, there's a lovely little couple. They're sweet.
And so they don't drink any alcohol?
I guess not. I mean, I didn't like have a full on conversation.
You haven't like rummaged through their cupboards yet?
No, like I'm literally in my own. I haven't even gone into the house. Like I'm in my own.
Are you allowed in the house, or are you just, that one room?
I mean, she said make yourself at home. So
you can go up and watch TV with them. Just put your feet up on their coffee table and be like, hey, I'm at home. This is great.
Clink my wine glass. No, I'm going to stay in my little hole because I have everything I need. It's like a little hotel room down here. So I have a little refrigerator and a microwave and all kinds of stuff. So I'm good to go.
Interesting.
But talk to me on day three of not having, well, let's be honest, I'm not going to follow these rules, but I just thought that was cute. So
yeah, adorable for them to think that that was going to be a thing that you're going to follow.
Teach me to read those rules, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I have a really exciting announcement to make.
Yeah.
Awesome story you just shared with everyone. So Michelle and I have been working really hard for when did we start doing this? Earlier this year. So it's been 9 months worth of working on this. We're going to launch a new dental podcast network.
Da, 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 da.
We need sound effects for that. So here's what the concept is. And I'm sorry if it's going to be kind of hard for me to explain, but I promise it's going to be awesome. Number one. And number two, it's just going to be awesome. So you have two promises of awesomeness right there. So basically, Michelle and I were like, we have all these amazing people that are coming on the show all the time. And some of them were like, holy moly, you have so much amazing content, but we can't have you on our show all the time. But you definitely need to get this information out there. And so when we come across several of these people, we're like, look, let us help you get your podcast off the ground. And so we have now 10 different shows on various topics of dentistry that we're going to put into only two different feeds. And so you're going to have a daily short on dentistry with DSOs. We're going to have public health, dental assisting, just various topics kind of throughout that we're really, really, really excited about. And so we'll make some further announcements as it goes along. We're going to do some social media posts. We'll tell you how to find it and how to subscribe to it. But I'm super excited, and hopefully you guys are too, but it's going to be like the best of from A Tale of Two Hygienists. That's what we should have named it, actually.
The best of.
Oh, we blew
it. Too late, buddy. Too late.
I know.
The branding has been done. But I think also I like to note that that might sound like, oh my God, when am I going to listen to more podcasts? Because Atah takes, you know, an hour plus every week. But these are little nuggets, like little short 15, 20 minute nuggets of information. I kind of liken it to like NPR's channel. Like I subscribe to NPR and then I'll get like all these little ones. Maybe I'll get Up First, which is 15 minutes, but then maybe I'll get Sam Sanders and wait, don't tell me, all those different ones. So I think it's, like you said, just a channel. So you only have to subscribe to that. Each day you'll get your information, and there'll be two channels too, because we'll have Monday through Friday currently. But we see this as an evolving project. So who knows what will come from it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, we'll keep you guys updated this whole entire time. But it's just, to me, I'm so excited about it because you guys have heard Charity Ludwig on the show talking about public health, and she is so incredibly smart. And, you know, you've heard Ashley McCauley, like a lot of these people you've already heard before.
Doug Perry. Yeah.
So all of these people are the ones that you guys already know and love. And so now we get to have more of them, and then we all get to be one family with them. So yep. It'd be great.
It's awesome. It's awesome.
So in this particular episode, this is round week three interview of our infection control month theme. And we have Kim Loudenslager on, and Kim and I go way back. We've worked together through CREDITS, which is the Central Regional Dental Testing Services, Inc. And it is. And she's come to my state several times to kind of help with different kind of rulemaking that we've been able to do as dental hygienists. And she's just has her finger on the pulse of all things testing. But then she also has this other side of her where for years she's been working on infection control and lecturing on infection control, OSHA, and kind of all the rules behind all of that. So she has a theme, rules. She likes the rules. And so she wants to share that with you. So we're very excited. Hope you guys enjoy this episode with Kim Loudenslager.
Hey, Michelle.
Yeah.
It's time for the interview.
Oh, but I had something else to say.
We need to let the experts talk now.
Fine.
All right. Welcome back, everyone, for the third installment of our infection control mini-series for this month. We have an amazing guest with us today that is going to be talking mostly on bloodborne pathogens, and I'd like to introduce Kim Loudenslager to the podcast. Thank you for being here, Kim.
Thank you for inviting me.
Now, Kim and I, we've worked together for several years now, actually. We've met through CREDITS, actually, was the first time we met, right, Kim?
Correct. Yep. Well, maybe we met when you were on the state board and I came to make a presentation. I'm not sure you were even with CREDITS yet, but our state board background, correct.
Yeah. And as we've been traveling around, I've got to know Kim quite a bit, and she's just a wealth of knowledge. And as we started speaking a little bit, kind of, in private about infection control. I just knew that we had to have her on. So this is going to be an amazing episode. But Kim, for our listeners who don't know you as well as I do, maybe give us a little bit of background about who you are and kind of where your background is.
Let's see. I'm a dental hygienist and I live in Colorado and I have pretty much practiced. This is my 40th year. I graduated in 79.
Congratulations. So,
yeah, anniversary year. And taught at the University of Colorado School of Dental Medicine for 32 years and been on the State Board of Dental Examiners here. I was 2 terms. And now that I'm off the dental board, I'm still a consultant for the dental board. And I started my own business on OSHA infection control training. And that will be next year will be 30 years. So a long time passion in infection control and compliance with OSHA. And obviously I was doing that before I was on the dental board. So it's just kind of a life of compliance and regulatory and that sort of thing.
So obviously no one better to start this. As we were talking a little bit off air, Kim, I wanted to start this episode speaking a little bit about maybe some of the differences between the states versus the national level of regulation with bloodborne pathogen stuff.
The questions I get most often is who are the players? And so I'll just kind of give that. There's OSHA is, and you asked me maybe today we're going to focus on bloodborne pathogens. And it's OSHA that has the bloodborne pathogen standard. So OSHA is a federal agency that issues guidelines. And what we're going to talk today about bloodborne pathogens, and obviously that affects dentistry. Now, some of the states have chosen to break away from the federal structure and be state OSHA states. And what my bottom line message is, it doesn't matter what state you live in, everybody has to comply with what we're going to talk about today, the bloodborne pathogen standard. Now, there might be a few states, and a good example would be California, that has imposed even stricter rules in some cases, okay? But what we're going to be talking about today are the rules that affect all 50 states, OSHA, bloodborne pathogen. Now, just a quick, the other players, and I know you have other speakers, but the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta, they issue the guidelines for infection control in dentistry. And then, of course, there's the State Board of Dental Examiners in every state. So those are pretty much the three big players, OSHA, CDC, and State Board. So I don't know if you want me to expand on that at all.
I actually kind of do want to just talk a little bit about the State Board's role in this. Are they the ones that are determining then what the standards are adopted into each state?
Yes, pretty much. Now, here's a good example. In Colorado, we have Rule 16. And if you're not familiar, most states have a statute. And then they have the statute says that the state board basically can make rules. In statute, we have wording that says you must practice to the standard of care when it comes to infection control. And then the state board had the authority to make a rule on exactly what that means. So then they wrote Rule 16. And Rule 16 is very, very clear in Colorado that you must be in compliance with all OSHA and CDC guidelines. And they've even specified what those guidelines, you know, what year and that sort of thing. So if you, perhaps in Colorado, are not following the rules, that gives the state board the grounds to issue discipline. And to my knowledge, even before we had Rule 16, there's like a general duty clause. And so every state has the same authority. It's just Colorado wanted to nail it down because a lot of people, maybe your listeners, will be looking through their state statute and saying, where does it say we have to follow the CDC guidelines? And just to be honest, nothing upsets me more than when somebody will say, well, that's a CDC recommendation, which means it's optional. And in Colorado and in most states, even though the CDC recommends it, it is mandatory because it's more of a legality thing. The CDC, what I've been told, is they do not have the authority ever to walk into an office and do an inspection. All they are is a guidance agency. So therefore, they can't use the word you must or this is mandatory because that's not their role. Their role is to make recommendations. Then it's up to OSHA and the state boards to enforce them. And I want to assure you that almost every state enforces all the CDC guidelines, mandatory, and of course, OSHA rules and regs as well.
So it's more of just like legalese when they say recommendation, it is still something that you need to be doing.
Absolutely. Thank you. That's exactly correct. Yep. Don't get hung up on that word recommendation, because trust me, it's mandatory. For instance, what I often say is, did you know it's a CDC recommendation that we wear gloves and we change them every patient? You're laughing, and it's fun, because I'll say to people, well, then let's not wear gloves. But everybody then is like, we have to wear gloves, but it's a recommendation. Well, it's also a recommendation that you spore test once a week, at least once a week.
Do your hand pieces.
Yes, exactly. And I know you'll probably have other speakers that focus on infection control, but that's a great point, is when the CDC recommends it, it's mandatory.
That's great information. And I am going to take that to all social media channels now. Thank you.
You've just given Michelle some ammo to fight more people.
I was like, oh, I fueled my fire now. I'm great. This is good.
And then the difference between OSHA and the state board, because those are the two players that do have the authority to come in, knock on your door, and do an inspection unannounced. Now, OSHA, which we're going to talk about today, bloodborne pathogens, they have issued, with the cooperation of the American Dental Association, they have pretty much promised they're not going to do any random inspections of dental offices. So my experience is both the state boards and OSHA only come into an office when there's been a complaint. So the whole trick is to avoid complaints, obviously. Do the right thing, avoid complaints, and neither of these agencies, OSHA or the state board, will be a part of your life with these issues. But OSHA cares about employees, and the state board only really cares about patient safety. So it's all about safety. It's just who, maybe when you watch a police show, it's like, whose jurisdiction is this? You know, were we across the county line or not? Well, in dentistry, it's if it affects the employee, it's going to be in OSHA's jurisdiction. If it affects the patient, it's going to be in the state board jurisdiction.
Well, that was excellent information. And I would love to really get into bloodborne pathogens, because that's something that you're also very knowledgeable about. And, you know, we have sometimes some listeners that have sent us emails. You know, I've been out of the dental hygiene game for a minute. Maybe they went on maternity leave, took care of a sick family member, and maybe they're 6 years out and they come back and they're like, oh, I don't remember all the details. So I would love to start at the beginning, and let's break down these bloodborne pathogens and the training.
Well, the bloodborne pathogen standard is obviously not specific to dentistry. It's for anybody in a profession that has to deal with blood. So when you read the bloodborne pathogen standard, it's going to be somewhat generic, okay? So it's not that, because it's not specific to dentistry. And that might be where some people get confused. But if you can put your dental hat on when you're reading it, you just keep thinking dental professional, and it makes sense, versus a, you know, either a nurse or a physician or a surgeon, lab techs, even morticians, believe it or not, have to follow the bloodborne pathogen standard, because as morbid as it is, they deal with blood, even though the person
is not pumping anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So bloodborne pathogens, it's all about, and if we go way back to the mid to late 80s, it all came about when HIV raised its head. And we had nurses, and I know, unfortunately, one of them who was exposed to an HIV patient. Of course, she's no longer with us because of that exposure. But the nurses are the ones that really drove the bloodborne pathogen standard, because they wanted gloves. They wanted safer devices. And back in the mid 80s, late 80s, we knew a lot less then than we do now. So OSHA wrote a bloodborne pathogen standard that basically put sanctions on the employer that said, you have to provide gloves for your employees. You have to provide safer needles for your employees. You have to provide the hepatitis B vaccine. If there's an exposure, you have to help them follow up. So that's what the crux of the bloodborne pathogen standard is all about. So that's where it started. And then, of course, it's obvious that we in dentistry deal with blood. So we, as a profession, must follow the bloodborne pathogen standard. The bloodborne pathogen standard has a specific section that says it is mandatory that all employers provide annual training for all of their employees that are affected by bloodborne pathogens. So in dentistry, a question I often get is, we know the dentists, the hygienists, and the assistants have to have annual training because we work in the back and that's a no-brainer. But then I also get, well, do the people up front have to have this training? And the answer to that is it depends, because I suppose if they had absolutely no exposure to blood, and I can think of some very, very large practices where they sit in an office and they're more administrative and they don't even touch patient charts. But my answer to most people is yes, the people up front need the training too, because if one of us in the back slips up and accidentally handles a pen, a pencil, or a chart and takes it up front, we're now exposing our coworkers up front to bloodborne pathogens. And that's when I drop the line that, you know, hepatitis B can live on a dried surface for days, sometimes even longer than a week. So that kind of opens the eyes for our friends who work up front. So now that I've got everybody's attention, it means we, everybody in the dental office, needs to have annual training for bloodborne pathogens. And another topic we're not talking about today is hazard communication. That's the labeling and the safety data sheets, but we're not going there today. So annual training is required for bloodborne pathogens for all of us in dentistry. Now, what does that annual training look like? OSHA is very clear, and they have, again, a direct section that says it must contain the minimum following elements. And then it lists 14 different elements that have to be in your training. And that's exactly what I do every year. I make sure I cover all 14 of those elements. And just so everybody knows, the last of the elements, the number 14, which is actually N, letter N in the alphabet, is number 14. It says that when you're being trained, you have to have the opportunity for interactive questions and answers with the person conducting the training. And OSHA has issued guidance on that, which means it has to be live and interactive. Your training cannot be done solely by video. It can't be done remotely. You can't just sit and watch a video and take a test. You have to have access to the trainer during the training. So I think that's a very important thing for people to know. I'm all in favor of online training to get extra knowledge, but in order to have it meet OSHA's requirements, it has to be with a qualified trainer, and it has to be live and interactive, and it has to be once a year.
Which for me, you know what a stickler I am for rules, Kim. I love that and hope that never changes. I mean, it's nice to have the knowledge, you know, accessibility online and things like that. But for something as serious as this, I'd rather have someone qualified teaching in person.
Right. But that's why
it can be webinar as well.
Exactly.
Webinars are, yeah.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say, Michelle. With so many of our thanks for our corporate sponsors and people who, you know, so it's not like you actually have to physically go somewhere or have somebody come into your office, but you could do a webinar. But just so you know, during that webinar, you do have to have like access to the speaker. They should be able to see you. You should be able to see them. And then they have to be able to answer questions. And again, there's a directive from OSHA that gives a criteria on that.
That's excellent to know. So that's number 14. So what was our first one?
Very good. The first one says you have to have an accessible copy of the bloodborne pathogen standard. And then the second one says you have to have a general explanation of the epidemiology and symptoms of bloodborne diseases. And the third one is you have to have an explanation of the modes of transmission of bloodborne pathogens. So kind of the first ones are kind of generic. So having an accessible copy of the bloodborne pathogen standard, you have to have that, which means you have to have a printed copy. And most dental offices purchase some kind of compliance manual, because there's so many parts. You have to have an exposure control plan. There's a ton of things in addition to the training that you have to have in place.
Do you have recommendations on those? Because I think I used to have the binder from ADA.
I love the ADA. That is my recommendation. I wish I could get a little kickback for every time.
Right? Get an affiliate link. You listening, ADA?
She needs 29 years. 29 years. The reason I like the ADA is because, one, I've been involved with offices that unfortunately had to be inspected by OSHA, and OSHA has complimented, has told me they really like the ADA manual. Partially the reason for that, I think, is it's dental professionals putting it together, their legal department. You know, they have the resources to keep it current and to keep it up to date. And I think of it more, and of course, if you're a member of the ADA, it's a discounted price. It's probably one of the most economical ways to be in compliance. And then their manual, their compliance manual has HAZCOM, Bloodborne, and Workplace. It has everything that you need in one binder. And they've now sending a CD-ROM with it so that if you have record keeping, which is a big part of this, you can actually pull up the document and in a Word format, you can fill it in and save it. So it's not just the hard copy, you have an electronic version of it as well. So it's amazing. That's my advice. That's my, and I think I can say this. I do my non-disclosure. I have no financial interest in any of the companies or products I talk about.
The obligatory non-disclosure.
Yeah, but it's a true statement. Nobody pays me ever to talk about their product. So
excellent. Mm-hmm. That's a rarity. Even
well, no, love it. Yes, thank you. I've stayed independent for a reason.
Good for you. So we would say ADA is a good resource to get the manual and the standard. And then number three was actually understand the transmission. Is that right?
Yes. It's what are the modes of transmission? And of course, basically there's two kinds. There's percutaneous and mucosal. So percutaneous means apocharistic or by way or through the skin. And then mucosal would be somehow you've exposed your eyes, nose, or mouth. I often say there's other mucous membranes, but they should not come into play during dentistry. So
none.
So the whole point is,
if it does, you're doing it wrong.
You've got, yeah, we have other issues. Exactly. So we just want to avoid percutaneous, pokes and sticks, and mucosal exposures. Those are the two routes primarily that we would have an exposure.
So would inhalation and ingestion kind of go into that mucus?
Nope.
As far
actually,
as like pathogen?
Yeah, well, possibly yes and no, because there is an airborne pathogen standard. Believe it or not, it's not being enforced because dentistry has been pretty much rated low to no risk. So airborne would be the chickenpox, measles, and tuberculosis. And I do lecture on that. But yes, what a great point is, even though you and I and we've discussed, we're focusing on bloodborne pathogens, I like to think everything when we talk about safety is going to protect us no matter what, if it's airborne or bloodborne or whatever the pathway might be.
So does like the flu or colds or anything fall into that? Or is it just mostly like you said, chickenpox and...
Nope. And again, you've got a great point because just this year in my presentation, I said beyond bloodborne pathogens, because honestly, if we continue this discussion, when we talk about bloodborne pathogens, which is Hep B, C, D, and HIV, I'm not even worried about. I just don't want to catch a cold. I don't want to catch the flu. I don't want to catch pink eye. I don't. So pretty much what's impressive to me is when I teach about bloodborne pathogens, those same principles apply to protect us against any infectious disease. And the reason OSHA focused on bloodborne pathogens, again, I'll go back to my initial statement, was HIV, you know, and so yes, Michelle, inhalation, ingestion, the principles of infection control, which we will talk about in a bit here as part, because it's like, it's what can be done to prevent transmission. And so I talk about engineering controls and work practice controls. And even though those obviously help prevent bloodborne pathogens, they're going to prevent any type of pathogen. So I love your thought process.
This is fascinating to me. Andrew's like, and I'm like, give me more.
So I have all the other elements, but since I kind of started on Hep B, C, D, and HIV, Let me just give a little preamble, because when I start my presentation, I use clickers. I use audience response. And so one of the questions is, which of the following hepatitis are bloodborne? A, B, C, D, and E are your options. And then, of course, we have an F and a G, but they're not highly popular or common, so I don't ask about those. But hepatitis A, B, C, D, and E are very common. And so if I had asked that clicker question to you too today, one of the options, of course, is B, C, D, and I've already given you the answer. But a lot of people don't even understand the difference between the hepatitis. So just a quick reminder to everybody that hepatitis A and E are food and waterborne. They're the way I teach it is ate it or eat it.
That's right? A good one.
Ate it or eat it.
That's a good one.
And so you usually catch those by eating or drinking contaminated food or water. And so generally speaking, that's not a risk in a dental setting. The other way I teach it is blood starts with a B and ends with a D. So B, C, D is the answer for the hepatitis. And just so everybody knows, hepatitis B does have the vaccine. And if you're vaccinated against B, you are protected against D, Delta hepatitis.
I am so glad I'm remembering these things. And then doesn't A have a vaccine now?
Yes. Uh-huh. Of course. Yep, they do. And you guys would be the perfect candidate for that, because I know you've traveled out of the country. If you're going to some underdeveloped countries where the water, it's part of the CDC's recommendations to get that vaccine. And there is a combination AB vaccine too.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm.
Okay. But it's not, just to be clear, the employer, the dentist, dental hygienist employer is not responsible for the employee's hepatitis A. It would just be the hepatitis B. So B is the only vaccine that the employer is responsible for paying for.
Good to clarify on that.
Yeah, because some employers, just recently you've seen dentists here in Colorado, they're campaigning for hygienists too, but we dentists now have been approved to give flu vaccines and other vaccines. And we're arguing that hygienists can probably do this as well. The employer doesn't have to pay for those, but I know a ton of offices where the employer is paying for their employees' annual flu shot, which I think is awesome. You know, it's being proactive, and I love that. They don't have to, but they're doing it.
Any of the clicker questions that you have, I would love them. Andrew might hate me on this, but I would love them.
Every time we try and do this, Kim, I fail miserably, and then I look stupid in front of our audience, and I hate my life afterwards.
Oh, you want me to do a couple clicker questions with you?
I'll take them.
You want them right? You want me to do them with you right now?
Sure.
I would like to. I want to test myself.
Okay. So
Andrew doesn't have to do this. I'll take one for the team.
Okay. So let's see. One of my first clicker questions was, which hepatitis viruses are a concern in dentistry? And then the options were A, B, C, D, and E. And since you can't see the slide, but we already said the answer was B, C, D, correct? So I gave that one to you. Now, my next question was, which bloodborne pathogen presents the biggest concern to dental professionals? And your choices, there's four choices, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, hepatitis D, or HIV. So what do you think,
hepatitis
Michelle?
Hepatitis B. B.
Actually, the answer is C. So I'll tell you why. So C stands for concern. That's how I teach it. Hepatitis B has a vaccine that is highly effective. And even for the about 5% of the population where the vaccine does not work, there is a post-exposure prophylaxis, which you may remember was immunoglobulin. So hepatitis B is absolutely seriously bad news. It's the most infectious of the three. It's 1 in 3 people exposed catch it. It lives on a dried surface forever, it seems. That's an overstatement, but it does. It's the hardiest, you know, several days, even on a dry surface, hep B can live. So B is bad news, but there's a vaccine and there's PEP. And then D goes with B if you're protected against B. Now, my further lecture is D. D stands for death. That's how I teach it, because if you're not vaccinated against B, the only way you can catch D is if you've already got B. It piggybacks or co-infects. So you have to catch B first. And then if you're unfortunate enough to catch D on top of it, it's often fatal. So that's all the more reason to get vaccinated and to know your vaccine status. So B is bad news, but vaccine and PEP. HIV, there's no vaccine, but there is post-exposure prophylaxis, right? Well, we could talk about that.
And it's harder to contract?
Well, it is now because almost everybody who knows of their HIV status is taking antiretrovirals. They're taking their cocktail. So even when there is an exposure, the risk of transmission is less. Now, back in the day, when I told you about the nurses, and one of the nurses I told you about, Julie, you know, she had her exposure and the patient's viral load for HIV was extremely high. And then in those days, there were no post-exposure prophylactic drugs. So all she could do was wait and see if she caught it. But honestly, there's never been a known exposure from patient to practitioner in dentistry, ever. Ever. So we're the only profession that the CDC tracks that's never had a known transmission of HIV from patient to practitioner. So a lot of times people who have never been trained, when I ask that question I just asked you, which of these presents the biggest concern, Hep B, C, D, or HIV, they answer HIV just because they're not trained. But HIV is the least of our concerns. The reason C is a concern is because there's no vaccine and there's no PEP. And just some epidemiology, which is part of the training, is we have about approximately 1 million Americans living with HIV, about 2 million Americans living with Hep B, and just close to 4 million Americans living with Hep C. So just that alone, you're more likely to see a Hep C patient than any of the others. Now, what you might be thinking about is the FDA approved about 2 years ago some drugs for the treatment and cure of Hep C. And you've maybe seen the commercials, they're Hep C Hope. And they are on the market and they do work for some people. So that's the good news now. In the last 2 years, I've been able to at least present that there's hope. If you were to contract Hep C and you can't do anything to prevent it, there's no post-exposure prophylaxis. You just have to wait and see if you catch it. And if you do catch it, you could turn around and talk to your physician and say, I want the cure. It's basically chemotherapy. Anyway, the answer was C. Long answer to a short question.
No, it's good information though.
Well, how about this one? Here's a new one. When it comes to the hepatitis vaccine, when does the CDC recommend a booster shot? And you have three choices. You actually have four, so I'll give you all four. A booster is recommended every 5 to 7 years. That's number one. Every 10 years. That's number two. Never, booster shots are not recommended. That's number three. And number four is not sure.
I'm going to say not sure because you could get a titer to see if it's still, but that if it's not working, then that would be, that number might be different for everyone.
Actually, the answer is number three, never. Now I need to follow up with that because once you have your vaccine, your three shots, which by the way, for the first time ever, last year, the FDA approved a brand new hepatitis vaccine that is two doses and they're 1 month apart, but you have to be 18 years of age or older. But that is super exciting for dentistry because if you hire a new employee, odds are they're 18 or older. And if they haven't had the vaccine or whatever, it's two shots, 1 month apart versus three shots, 6 months apart. So anyway, once you get your vaccine, the CDC recommends that you wait 1 month and get a titer test. So Michelle, you use the right buzzword, perfect. Have you had a titer, by the way?
Yes.
And what was your titer? Do you remember what the words were? That was it? Responder, reactive? What did it
disclose? I do not. I don't think I knew to pay attention to that.
Okay. So when you get your titer, you want to know that your The magic number is 10. If your antibody, your surface antibody, hepatitis B surface antibody titer is over 10, that means you are immune for life. And I could say that about myself. I had my 3 shots back in the early 90s, if not the late 80s. I think it was the late 80s. And then it was in 1997 that the CDC recommended that all healthcare professionals at risk get a titer. And then, again, it's an evolution thing, but we now know that if you have a titer over 10 at any point in your life, you're safe. Now, of course, we're all guinea pigs here, and I say that with a little bit of a clause, because they may learn in the next few years that, because the vaccine's only been around 30 years, so they may learn that it wanes at a certain point. But right now, the answer is never. Once you have a titer and you know that you responded to the vaccine because you're showing antibodies, you are done for life.
Perfect. I hope that's what mine said.
Well, and that's the thing. I've been 1997, Michelle. Do you know how many people do not even know? I ask this question every year about when is a booster required? And of course, the people who come every year, which is a good majority. So usually about 75% get it right. But then there's a good number of people who it's their first time hearing me, or they haven't had training before, and they answer like you did, not sure, or they guess, because the answer never, boosters are not recommended, doesn't sound right, you know, but it is the answer. Yeah, it is the answer. So then one of my questions as I follow up is, are you a responder? Are you a non-responder or an unknown responder? And in your case, Michelle, you would have to answer unknown, because you know you've had the shots, and even though you had a titer, you don't know what that report showed. So at this point, you're unknown. I am in the known category. I know that I responded. And then, as I alluded to earlier, a very small percentage are what we call non-responders. And before you can call yourself a non-responder, you have to go through 2 complete series. If you did 3 shots and had a titer, and it showed non-responsive, you'd have to go through 3 more shots, or now that they have the new vaccine, you could go through 2 shots, and then you'd have to have another titer. But if after you've completed 2 series of shots, if you cannot develop those antibodies, for some reason, we don't know why, the shots don't work, you're in the category of non-responder. And that's the whole reason OSHA and the CDC recommend that every employer has to pay for the vaccine and the titer. And you should know your titer always, because if you have an exposure, like me, I have an exposure and the patient is Hep B positive, I could care less, because I'm a responder. I'm not going to catch Hep B. And the employer has to take care of this for us, and it is part of the OSHA rules. So that's probably one of the things that kind of frustrates me, because that's been around since 1997. But yet people are still kind of lax on that one.
Yeah, this is the first I'm hearing of it. And I've taken every yearly bloodborne pathogen course.
There you go. All right.
Any other ones?
Oh, let's see. I love it. Let me click down
I'm
here.
I'm actually learning more from the questions.
I love this one. Okay, let me answer this one. Instruments used on a this is a true false, okay?
Okay.
True or false? Instruments used on a hepatitis and or HIV patient should be processed carefully and separately from other instruments.
False. So false. And please, everyone, stop.
Yay! Even Andrew chimed in on that one. Yeah, but you can't.
That's a point for both of us. We really hate that when we see it on social media, people getting that wrong.
I love your reactions, because in my seminars, you can't imagine how many people answer true. And that's a typical person who has not been trained. Okay.
Or I would even say trained, because they just can't get over it. Like, they have that emotional reaction to it and emotional reasoning despite all the evidence, because I've worked with many of those people. When that Hep C, Hep B patient comes in, we are fighting in the sterilization. I'm like, if you run those instruments twice, you and me after work.
Yeah.
Don't
out on the curb. We're taking it down.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, but that, just for the listeners who are thinking, what the heck are they talking about? Because maybe their inclination was true. what Michelle, Andrew, and I are so passionate about here is that's one of the main principles is that we follow what's called standard precautions. It used to be called universal precautions, but for lack of better words, it's now called standard precautions. Both of them work with me. But what it means is we always treat every patient as though they have Hep B, C, HIV, XYZ, whatever, because that way it doesn't matter what they have. We know that we've practiced to a standard every day, all day, that will protect us. So another way to say standard precautions, because one of the questions I do when I'm interviewing people for my the state board here sometimes asks me to do inspections of dental offices where there's been complaints. And one of the questions is, can you please tell me in your own words, what does it mean to practice standard or universal precautions? And of course, the textbook answer is we treat all patients the same. But then for our listeners, that's a great answer, by the way. But what that really means is we never alter our infection control based on a patient's health history. We do everything the same every time for every patient, because one of the things in the training on the bloodborne pathogens is what are the signs and symptoms if you were to have Hep B, C, or HIV? And of course, the answer is they're generally asymptomatic, at least initially. Most people who have Hep B, Hep C, and HIV don't even know it. And so we can't trust our health history. Right? I mean, they might circle no, no, no to Hep B, Hep C, HIV, whatever, but it doesn't matter to us because we treat every patient as though they have those diseases. Did I explain that for our listeners?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So good. Yes. Excellent. Yeah. I do have a quick digression before we move into the next question, because I'm loving these. For our patients that have HIV or Hep, or TB, Cavitron and aerosol procedures. Mm-hmm. What is the standard?
Okay, so you brought, if you'd have just stuck with hepatitis and HIV, it falls under, yeah. Because tuberculosis goes into another category. Okay. Let's treat, generally speaking, the answer to your question is we still practice standard precautions because that means we use the ultrasonic on every patient. What you do and what you have to do is you have to make sure you're wearing the proper PPE. Because how many patients do we might be treating that have Hep B, Hep C, and God forbid tuberculosis? We're treating them and they don't even know they're infectious and we're using the ultrasonic. So the answer is you still treat those patients. Now, if somebody, the difference between Hep B, HIV, and tuberculosis, if somebody knowingly has tuberculosis, we don't treat them at all. Now, this is where legally it comes into, we don't treat them because we defer treatment. We defer. What we say is, we want you to come back and, you know, because they have to take their antibiotics. We want you to come back when you're healthy, which is usually what, 7 to 10 days. We're not talking a long time, but if possible, unless it's an emergency, we would never treat an active tuberculosis patient ever. Now the difference.
And there's dormant. Uh-huh. Dormant version of TB.
Yeah, but dormant doesn't. Dormant. Good question. Dormant is no risk. Absolutely none. Somebody can be a carrier of TB, but they're not going to transmit the disease unless they have the active, unless they start getting the fever and the cough and the sputum. So I love that you brought that up because people probably confuse dormant or what you're calling, you know, the carrier state. If you have a carrier state of hepatitis or HIV, you are very infectious. You could infect others. If you have a dormant or inactive case of TB, you're carrying it, but you can't be infectious unless it turns into the active stage.
Perfect. That's great.
So
essentially we can, and you said personal protective equipment, sorry for interrupting you, but we're talking like proper level mask and high speed
every day, all day,
or high volume suctions and all of that. Like that is very important for those moments. So it's not so much the patient. We can't do those procedures, but we need to be protecting ourselves properly no matter what.
Correct. And that's a great point is It doesn't, it's not based on the patient, it's based on the procedure. So when we're using Cavitron or ultrasonic, again, you don't have to use like a respirator that's specific for tuberculosis, because we're not going to treat tuberculosis patients. If we know they're TB, and we would have to have a HEPA respirator unless it's an emergency. So yes, it's based on our PPE. It's based on the procedure. We would always wear our mask. We would wear it correctly. The high-speed evacuation, that's a very current, you know, California, for instance, just made it mandatory that if your hygienist or dentist is using an ultrasonic or Cavitron, they either have to have an assistant or they have to have an engineering control, which is like the high-speed suction. I know you interviewed on one of your podcasts the person who has that suction. I've forgotten.
Newbird.
Yeah. So that's an engineering control that helps. It's a high speed evacuation that the hygienist can use without an assistant. But that should be done on every patient.
Mm. And Washington's passing that soon, or has, right, Andrew?
Working on it. Still in legislation.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Mm. But I think it's happening anyway, just so you know, even in Colorado. I mean, most of us who, you know, even if it's a saliva ejector, there's some really cool, it's not as powerful as a high-speed evacuation, but there's engineering controls that keep it. And the flip side of that is so many of our ultrasonics now have low mist. You know, they're not like the old days where the patient had to wear a raincoat, right?
Yeah.
So manufacturers have made it safer, and we're wearing protective equipment that makes it safer, so we could care less what the patient has.
Awesome. And okay, so what else do we have?
I think my biggest thing is on prevention strategies. So the whole thing about bloodborne pathogens is it focuses, number one, on standard precautions, which we just talked about, is you have to be treating every patient as though they have an infectious disease. We never alter our infection control based on a patient's health history. Vaccinations. We talked about vaccinations. And the only one that really is mandatory for the bloodborne pathogen is hepatitis B. But this year, I am lecturing big time on vaccinations, because with the measles outbreaks and that sort of thing, I think as a healthcare professional, it is our personal obligation to keep up on our own vaccines and keep ourselves healthy. Hand hygiene, PPE, engineering work practice controls, all of these things are inherent in the bloodborne pathogen standard. They're designed to keep us safe. That's the bottom line.
Love it. Any other questions on your list?
Oh, I probably could keep you going forever, but okay. I have a trivia question this year. This one's what I end with, because I always have to have something just fun so I can collect my clickers. And let me see if I can find it. It's who said the following. I bet you don't even need me to. Maybe we should let Andrew answer first. No, seriously, Andrew, you're going to be fine. I think you're going to be fine.
All right. I have my answer already in my head without even listening.
You're like, oh, you
B,
do?
Whatever it is, B.
B. Or Dr. Seuss. Or someone.
So your choices are going to be, number one, Adam Levine. Number two, Adele. Number three, Freddie Mercury, or number four, Miley Cyrus. So who said the following? I was born with four additional incisors. More space in my mouth means more range.
C.
Yes, Freddie Mercury.
Yay, Freddie. Wasn't that
Don't
a great movie?
Stop me now.
Wasn't that a great
Andrew
movie?
Andrew loves when I sing that every time we get started.
I had to Google it to see if that was true, because he said that in the movie. You know, we're talking about Bohemian Rhapsody. But he said to his bandmates when they were dissing on him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to Google it to see if scientifically that's true, that if you had more space in your mouth, it gives you more range. But it said something like it's not proven, but I thought, well, if Freddie said so, it's real.
And he had pretty great range.
Exactly. Exactly. So, exactly.
So we have about 5 minutes left.
Okay.
What's some good info, if we could just do like rapid fire on bloodborne pathogens?
I kind of like the way you led in today was, even though it has the title bloodborne pathogens and I have to lecture when I'm teaching and training, I have to be specific to OSHA's 14 elements. I like to expand it and think of it as everything. It's not just bloodborne. We want to be safe when we go to work every day. We want to come home healthy. We want our patients to come in and go out healthy. We don't want anybody catching any diseases during the day because we had poor infection control or because we were unaware. So the other thing that I did not focus on, just to finish, is the risk of transmission of any bloodborne pathogen is extremely low. Now, I can understand back in the day when HIV, when we didn't have any antiretrovirals and it was obviously a disease that was killing people, it was a big concern. So that's where the bloodborne pathogen standard came from. But when you really look at Hep B, C, and HIV, there were many healthcare dental professionals, many dental healthcare professionals who contracted Hep B from their patient, but that was before we had the vaccine. And it, your answer, Michelle, earlier when you guessed B in the day, that was correct. It was crazy bad, but not now. Hep C, to my knowledge, we'd have to go to the CDC again, but I don't know of any known cases of a dental professional contracting Hep C from their patient. The risk, here's the quick numbers. For Hep B, it's 1 in 3. For Hep C, it's 1 in 60. And for HIV, they changed it last year, it's 1 in 435. Now, that's from a percutaneous exposure from a known, from a patient who has that disease. So Hep B, 1 in 3, Hep C, 1 in 60, HIV, 1 in 435. So even though I have to spend so much time talking about all that, the risk is so very low. Hep B, I'm a known responder. Hep C, 1 in 60. HIV, 1 in 400, chances are I'm never going to catch that. I'm honestly more worried about pink eye and strep throat and the common cold. So I like to think everything we learn from the lecture about how to prevent, and that's where we talked about standard precautions, you know, wearing your PPE properly. I use the words engineering and work practice controls, and those are foreign to a lot of people because it's not in our typical vocabulary. But engineering controls are devices and equipment that prevent or minimizes the risk of exposure. And then a work practice control is a behavior or a technique that minimizes the risk of exposure. And this is all part of bloodborne pathogen training. And I show, if I ask immediately, one of the questions I ask on my state board interview form is, can you please give me an example of an engineering and work practice control? So if I've given you the answer to what they are, can either of you give me some good examples of engineering and work practice controls we use in our daily life or practice?
So like the safer, sharper, capper devices.
Okay, so in Washington, Andrew knows this, when I've tested in Washington, a lot of the hygiene students, you're right, that's an engineering control. It's like either the little business card that has the hole in it or that little, it looks like a rubber stopper. What do you call that? Do you know?
I think we call them like volcanoes or something.
Yeah.
Not the metal volcanoes, but the rubber ones.
Yeah. Those are engineering controls. Those are things you have to buy or purchase. Do you have any examples, Michelle? You think of?
Those were actually mine, but I was going to use Andrew got to me, got it first. But it, like you mentioned earlier, your high volume.
Yes.
Suction.
That's a perfect one. Yeah. So we use so many engineering controls, the Sharps container, the ultrasonic cleaner, heavy duty utility gloves, cassettes. If you have to buy it, and it keeps you safer, that's an engineering control. So everything, now a work practice control, any examples?
I feel like that would be like one of, like it'd be very specific to my company. We have a rule that if you are disposing of Sharps, this is how our company is going to do it. You use this tool for this plus this.
Okay, perfect. It's right. It's a behavior. It's not something you buy. And now, did you have anything to chime in, Michelle?
Just not leaving the actual operatory with the incorrect gloves or without leaving the operatory with your
PPE on
lab coat.
That's a policy. That's a procedure. We went back because the first thing Andrew brought up was the recapping device that was an engineering control. I personally recap using the one-handed scoop technique. That's a work practice control. It's not something you buy. It's something you do.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And then the fact that we're not supposed to have food or drink in the operatory. And then, Michelle, you were perfect and spot on. When you go into the break room, you should not, never, ever have on your PPE, because the break room is a safe place, right? So that's a work practice control. Washing your hands, hand hygiene. That's the words we use now, is hand hygiene. We don't call it hand washing anymore. We call it hand hygiene, because with the introduction of alcohol-based hand rubs, you have a choice. But that's not something you buy. It's something you do. So anyway, to wrap it up, what you were saying is, these are all things that we should be doing on a daily basis. It's all part of the bloodborne pathogen training, so that you're safe, your patients are safe, and no disease is spread.
That's perfect.
Man, I loved this episode. I love all of this. Andrew's like, oh God, you're such a nerd, but I love it.
Well, how about me? I get the nerd. They come, and because how many people could make infection control and OSHA at least palatable? No pun intended. And 29 years, going on 30 years, and I have some of the best clients. You know, they just come every year and they're my friends. And then, of course, nationally, you speak to a lot of my very good friends on your podcast. So it's a very tight community. We are passionate about what we do. And my goal is to keep all offices out of trouble. I don't want anybody being contacted by either OSHA or the state board. I have checklists. I think most people like me do. It's not rocket science. It's really pretty easy. You just have to find time to do it.
And follow the rules.
Yeah.
So if anyone wants to take one of your courses, or maybe has a question, wants to reach out to you, how can they do that?
Please. I appreciate that. My website's kimloudenslager.com. I don't care if they come to my seminar or not. They can always email me. Andrew knows this. Some people have privacy issues, and I'm like, my name is unfortunately out there for a lot of things, this, you know, credits and state board. And so I take it as an opportunity when people contact me. The more questions I get, I put that in my presentation next year, because it's like, oh my gosh, people are concerned about this, 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 and this is like the new thing. So yes, kimloudenslager.com is my website, and my email, I think you can give to everybody. It's my name plus comcast@comcast.net. I'm more than happy to answer people's questions. I want to put in one last plug is for OSAP, because OSAP, OSAP.org, is an organization of dental professionals dedicated to infection control. And any and everybody, anybody who speaks on this topic, I would, if you're taking a webinar, a CE course, if they're not a member and they're speaking on this topic and they're not a member of OSAP, I would have concerns. I don't know if you want to put this in, but I sent Andrew an article, and it was, 10 top things, and somebody I'd never heard of.
Yeah, I read it.
Interviewed, and I'm thinking, this is published? And it was so much misinformation, and I was embarrassed, and I didn't know if I should, you know, and then I just had to let it go, because I was thinking, I better write the editor and say, this was not right. This was not right. This was not right. And I'm just thinking, please be careful about your sources. Please never rely on Facebook.
Jesus.
Have I hit a hot topic?
Facebook is the point of contention for me on a daily basis. But
well, I was doing an inspection for the state board, and the assistant attorney general rode along because she just wanted to see how this kind of whole process went. And after it was all over, she said, can I give one suggestion? And I said, for your seminars. And I said, I would love it. She said, can you please tell people that anything they post on Facebook is public domain and can be used in a court of law? And they had taken down so many people when an assistant says, where does it say we have to spore test once a week? Because we only do it once a month. You've just thrown your whole office under the bus. And then, of course, the first 15 answers, you know what they were?
Are wrong.
Wrong. It was like, well, that's just a recommendation. You don't have to do it. It's just a recommendation. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness. So anyway, I do have a Facebook account. Andrew will tell you I'm a total stalker. I never post. But I do see this, and it just it's disturbing. So,
well, you can send them to me and I'll post it.
No, you would be a full, no, it's a full-time job. So please.
And we can stop this and I'll talk to you in a second. But we want to really thank you for taking the time coming on. We hope everybody reaches out to you if they have questions and takes one of your courses. This was really fun. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And thank me. I wanted to thank you guys for all you do. It's amazing. You have a great product, a great service. And I know so many people who have benefited from it, including myself.
Thank you, Kim.
Thank you, Kim. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So obviously, Kim is just a wealth of knowledge. And I think you were like, wrap it up, Michelle. Like, stop asking so many questions.
Yeah. It's one of those things too, is like we had an idea. She's so good. She sent us some information ahead of time of what we were going to discuss. But then as these things evolve, we kind of do get a little bit selfish and we're like, hey,
what about this?
So I know you're presenting, but like now just talk to me, because I'm sure everyone else has this question too. So talk to me. So sorry about that, everyone, but also kind of not sorry. So
yeah. There. And I've already emailed her like a gazillion times. I really appreciate her dedication to infection control. And it's one of those things that you develop these bad habits. You go into offices where maybe you're not supported and you're just trying to survive. And quite frankly, we all just need to get on board with having the best standards in this world, because we're working on human beings that don't want to be sick. So let's all have good, proper infection control. And so I really do appreciate the dedication to anyone or the dedication anybody has to want to continue infection control, because nobody likes to talk about it. Like, you got to really love it to get the pushback that I know a lot of these people are getting anytime they're going in there talking about infection control. So thank you for that.
Yeah. And it goes to prove the point that we say over and over again, like all of the guests want you to reach out to them. Please do. They'll reply to your emails. Just, you know, reach out if you have any thoughts or questions.
Yep.
So we have some things coming up. We have a few conferences that we'll be attending. So coming up next is going to be
AOSH with me.
AOSH.
And then yep. Greater New York.
Yep. Those are the ones for this year. Oh, and also, like, we should probably put a plug in for this. You guys have heard Dr. Tony Stefanou on the podcast before. So in October,
and I'm Teresa be Duncan's
course, and Teresa Duncan's. Oh, sorry, those two have a course. It's amazing, but it's gonna help me figure out a little bit more behind the options that are out there in dentistry. And it's called Beyond the Operatory. And you can do a quick Google search. We'll put some links in the show notes as well for that. If there are spots available, I don't know that there are very many if there are, but if there are spots available, I'd love to see you guys there. Go ahead and sign up for that. It's not an inexpensive course, but it's going to be definitely worth it if you are working in multiple like disciplinary things within hygiene. Also, Dr. Stefanou and Michelle actually have a company called Trivia Dent,
yep,
which never gets enough love on this podcast because Michelle is too modest to say anything about it, but it's an amazing, amazing thing that they've come up with. And so if you haven't checked out Trivia Dent, we have some promo codes and things like that. Just check out on our social media to get you a huge discount, but there's a chance to win some cash prize.
Yeah, because there's a, so you sign up, it's like $12 for the entire year. You get a quiz a month and it's just trivia. So it's not like you're being tested on like infection control, even though there's some of that in there, but it could be like, how wide is the Statue of Liberty smile? Very cool, random facts like that. So if you like trivia and I don't know, you like winning money, you should probably just try to do that. And Andrew won. And Sarah Lawrence won this past month. So I do
and
what I on. Love is like Jennister winning.
I was just going to say, Edie also won at the live event. And there's been like, yeah, lots of hygienists are really killing it right now, which goes to prove like, look, we try. We try to understand all of the things that are being thrown our way. I had a thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
So really embarrassing though. So I killed it. 2 months in a row.
You did.
Thing, right? Okay, hold on. Here's the embarrassing part is I didn't even qualify on that last one. Last month when I did it, I can't remember what the standard is, but I got like a 50%. Like it was very, like, it wasn't like hard. It was just, it was different than what my particular strong suit is. So I guess that the point of me telling that is one, yes, let's all laugh at Andrew because he's, you know, a big dork when it comes to the history of dentistry, which is what that the theme was for that.
I might have picked that one. I'm sorry.
Oh my gosh. It just killed me. Like, give me products and give me that kind of stuff. That's then local anesthesia and whatever it was that I was doing so hot on. But they vary, like all the topics vary. So like 1 month you're going to kill it. One other month you might not, but just keep checking in because 1 month is going to be your strong suit.
Yeah, for sure. And you're going to win crazy prizes. And then we're going to have live events. You're going to be able to have like a showdown or a team. Like, you know, if you want to bring your friends that are in your office, your colleagues were all at a meeting one day or like at a greater New York or something. You want to challenge another office. Like how fun would that be? So we're going to do some fun things coming up with that, but yeah, go to triviadent.com and you can sign up. And like I said, $12 a month. We also want to thank PDT as always for sponsoring the CE portion of this podcast. They are amazing people who make amazing instruments, and they've been supporters of us since the very beginning. And so if you enjoy the podcast and you enjoy getting CE, and I don't know, you like your scalers in your hands, you should go check them out because they're pretty great.
And we have had a couple of people ask, how do you access the CE? In every podcast app, there is a little thing you can click onto that's called show notes. And so that just talks about what is going on in this episode, what you can expect. At the very, very bottom of those show notes are a bunch of links, and that's where you go to take the test, which is on one of our other supporters, CE Zoom, has so lovingly partnered with us, and they're helping us create all these tests in this format to give you guys the CE as well. So between the two of them, like, they're really bringing you guys a really awesome opportunity for some distance learning. Also, don't forget to check out that new podcast channel that we have. It's called the Dental Podcast Network. And there are two channels, channel one and channel two.
And it'll be in October.
Yep. So when you're searching your podcast app right now, there's already some teaser episodes that are loaded that you guys will be able to listen to. So enjoy those ones until the first shows come out in the beginning of October. September 30th is actually the launch.
Excellent. And you can definitely follow us on any of the social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, if you'd like. You can also head over to our website, which is a great place to also get those show notes and take that CE just with that link there. And that's ataleoftwohygienists.com. And you can email us at michelle@ataleoftwohygienists.com or andrew@ataleoftwohygienists.com. And please tell everybody, share it, and also go to iTunes, like us, review us, and please just keep telling your friends. We appreciate you guys. You're the best, really.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, and next week's going to be another great episode. I'm really excited about it. I hope you guys will be able to stick around to enjoy that. But until then, take care, everybody.
Have a great week.